and welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I am back with my next guest, Mary Glickman, and the name of her book is By the Rivers of Babylon. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper. So happy that I'm going to play a little song for you, okay?
Oh, how cute.
Walking boss, walking boss, walking boss. Well, I don't belong to you. I belong to that steel driving crew. Work one day.
Okay, Mary.
And that's the Doc Watson version, I believe.
Uh-huh, it is.
Yeah. Which a lot of people know the Jerry Garcia, don't know the Doc Watson.
I prefer this version. I love it.
Me too.
I thought it would set the right tone for talking about this book, because right. By the Rivers of Babylon is definitely a Southern book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, ma'am.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's so funny. When I was young, I read American books. I read a lot of English authors, French authors, Russian, Chinese, but I could not read Southern books for some strange reason.
No, Flannery O'Connor.
No, and it was so funny. But then somewhere around that age of 14, I read my first Faulkner. So that changes after you get your toe in Southern writing. It is different.
Well, it is. And I think personally, I believe that that comes from the fact that Southerners are traditionally oral storytellers. And, you know, and so that the storytelling craft is deeply ingrained in the Southern ear. And it's from your ear that you write.
And right from the first page, when you start writing, you capture that voice. I just loved it. I love that opening.
Well, I've been working on that voice for a while.
And, you know, just for people who have not been where there are these bridges across the bayous and bridges across intercoastal, they don't have this understanding of what it is to drive up to a bridge and see you're going to be waiting there.
Right.
And then you capture that feeling and the voice of the people.
Wow.
I thought it was wonderful. I immediately actually did start thinking of Faulkner, because like him, there's something baffling about the story, confusing, and it's complex, like a Faulkner, and of course, brilliant.
Oh, shucks, thank you. I think you were born to read me, Patsy.
I think I was, because once you start reading, your writing is, it captures the essence of the South. And I think you start hearing it in your head as you're reading. You hear that sound, the more lilting sound, perhaps a little bit slower when some people are talking. I found it mesmerizing.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, you know, one of the reasons that I wrote this book was because I live here. I consider myself a Yankee by birth, a Southerner by choice. And it disturbed me that in the news and, you know, on television in Hollywood, that the image of the Southerner is always so dark. And it didn't reflect, the Hollywood version of the Southerner didn't reflect the South I knew. So I thought I would redeem the South in the public image in my own small way by writing this novel.
Well, exactly. I think that's why I was turned off by the images I got from Hollywood of the South.
Right.
And
right.
It took quite a while until I got immersed into the writing. When you're reading a book set in the South, you really, I think something happens to your heart rate. It changes or something. And By the Rivers of Babylon explains the premise for the story, because for Northerners, leaving the North and going to the South, they do expect a completely different world.
Right. And, well, they get one, but it's not the completely different world they expected. It's you know, I think that they have one little culture shock after another, but curiously they find they like them. And, you know, things would have gone very well for them if it hadn't been for the fact that the wife there, Abigail, is a bit of a troublesome character.
Well, Joe and Abigail are from Boston. They're Jewish.
Right.
They really are coming to something that is different, certainly from Boston. They have their voice, just in speaking, is different. And so sometimes when you be writing, I think of her talking with a Boston accent and then being immersed here in the South.
Well, I tried to achieve that effect, and I'm so glad to be validated. Thank you.
Well, it works. It works. So tell us more about, you know, one of the things about this, and when I mentioned the word baffling, this book takes twists and it takes turns and unexpected. I was not expecting, I don't think I expected what I got. It was a very pleasant surprise. And we don't want to tell people where the changes were, but they developed gradually. And in a way, sort of in a Falcon-esque manner, because he would always put these little things in that would lead us, you know, down the road, down a dusty road. Usually,
the old breadcrumbs.
That's right. And but you did it, and I'll tell you, from I started to get a tingle the minute you started to describe Abigail on the bridge. Standing on the bridge. From that minute, I knew something was going to, electric was going to happen to this story.
And I think it does.
It does.
Yeah, I'll tell you something odd, perhaps, about the construction of the story, if you like.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I wrote it twice. I wrote it, the first time I wrote it, it ended, shall I say, shortly after the Rosh Hashanah experience. And then I realized that, and Peter, my agent, was out there submitting it, and then I realized I wasn't done. And I started it again from a critical point and moved forward with the second half or third. So that plotting probably snuck up on me, too.
Well, it's fascinating how a story can evolve as characters evolve. Writers take on these people who become very real to them. The way that they evolve, the story evolves, isn't always expected.
No, well, people can still surprise you all the time. The thing about the characters, though, in this that's kind of amusing is that I modeled it. I won't say I based it. I won't say it was inspired by, perhaps is a better word than modeled, by the place where I live, naturally, on John's Island. And I took some of the characters in this story, I didn't base them on individuals, but I created amalgams, and they all had the values that I see around. And there were our venues in the story that are pretty close to reality. And there, of course, are the musicians in it who are based in reality. But what was odd is that now that it's out, and now that a bunch of my neighbors and friends have read it, people will come up to me and say, "Oh, I hope you didn't make me the chubby girl by the fire pit." Or they say, well, a couple of the men have come up and say, "Well, I know I must be Billy Houston."
They wish.
And that's pretty funny. Yeah.
Well,
but character, you know, as the Greeks say, character drives plot and character is fate. And so to me, in writing, the most important thing is to get the characters right, and then everything else will fall in place.
Well, Billy is such a character. He's so real. He's so full-blown. He comes like he's real. I kept thinking to myself, but this is a real guy. You know, it's marvelous how you do this.
Well, he's, you know, he's a bad boy, but he's also has his charm, and people like him. So, you know, I find that's true in life all the time.
You're a fantastic writer, and you've written, you know, some just marvelous books. But of all the books, that this is the most cinematic. I mean, I was like, what? You know, this is, I just kept
from
thinking,
your mouth, as they say.
Well, you know, it happens. It's very funny. I've seen the film in my head. You know, this comes from, mm-hmm. you know, adapting some books, you know, into scripts,
yeah.
and writing my own scripts. When I see it, it's sort of like where the crawdads sing. You know, I see this as a film. And for one point when, which scene was it? I was reading and I was thinking, I had to stop myself and say, this is not a movie. You're reading a book. And I was like, I almost wanted to knock myself on the head with the book and say, it's not a movie. You're really reading the book.
Well, all I can say is if you know anybody.
Well, you know, I have a feeling. I always tell people when I get this feeling for a book that if they get a deal, they have to, not only they have to come on Joy and Paper to break the news, because, you know, I don't get a lot of breaking news. I mean, as somebody on the radio, you know, you always love to have breaking news. I don't have any breaking news. But I would love, when you get a deal, for you to come on the program and announce it. And then I insist.
One of the happiest days of my life.
Exactly, because it would be. And I insist that you invite me to the premiere.
Oh, absolutely.
I can see immediately going to streaming, you know, video. Uh-huh. But this one, this one with the characters you have, Abigail, the actress who plays Abigail, and the one who plays Billy.
You know what, though? I can't think of one pretty enough.
No, there isn't. You know, I was saying that. This is, as a matter of fact, one of the great ways, you know, and I know your agent, and he's listening, I hope, and I'm telling him one of the things that a way to really get publicity for this book is to do a casting call of your own. Just say, I am the author of this book, but I don't see one actress out there beautiful enough to play Abigail, and I would like to start casting this movie before it's even picked up, before anyone options it. I want to pick the actress. Now, this would get you such publicity.
It would.
This is nowadays okay. You have to do things out of the box. You cannot wait for them to come to you.
I know that, but it's you know, I grew up, I'm not a young woman, and I grew up in my image of what authors did was kind of based on, you know, the last 5 minutes of the Johnny Carson show when he would interview authors. Nobody does that anymore.
No, nobody does it.
And New York Times reviews, which aren't even very important anymore. And all of the goals that I used to have, I think they culturally have disappeared.
They've all disappeared.
And it's a new world. I'm not sure. You know, part of me says it's hard enough to sit down and write the book. I don't know how to do all these other things.
Well,
but
you
I try the best.
Well, you're very good. You look very good on camera. I love seeing you climb on your horse. One of the things
gone
is,
now,
you know, I know it's a shame, but it's wonderful that you have this this background. When I see a book like this, and I really want, it's so difficult nowadays to get the notice that you need. Mary Higgins Clark was on the program many times, and she told me how wonderful, you know, in the early years, they would send her out on these magnificent first-class tours, first-class tickets.
Right.
They would send an assistant with her to help her navigate the airport, get to the hotel, get to the location for the interview. You know, really everything top class. And then it dwindled over the years, and by the end, she said, they said, well, if you go on tour, you know, send us your ticket and we'll refund you. And she said, this is not, I'm not going to do that. She didn't say, I'm Mary Higgins Clark and I don't do that. But she said, you know, this is, it got ridiculous. Authors don't get this kind of action on the part of publishers anymore. And you have to have a platform. You have a website and you have,
such as it is.
That's it. But there has to be action, and this is why I've more and more looked at ways for people to get this notice that they need. Because, I mean, in Hollywood, if they're looking, they've got it here. They've got it here in Mary Glickman's "By the Rivers of Babylon." It's beautifully written. I mean, you're an award-winning author, so we don't have to worry about that. And actually, the nice thing, you know, one of the things that I thought when I was reading the book, my goodness, as somebody who's taken people's books and adapted them into scripts. I did one book, and I worked very hard on taking this person's book, making it into a script, and when it was finished, the author read the script, and he sort of looked at me, and he said, "You haven't used my..." I felt so bad. I said, "No, I used about 200 of your words. Those were perfect."
Right.
But in your book, you have dialogue that you can take straight from the book and put it in a script. It's perfect.
Well, I did want to be an actress when I was 17, so maybe there's some of that in there.
But
you know, I did have a film contract,
option.
Option on my first novel, Home in the Morning, and, you know, it never got produced.
I know.
Which is what happens to most of them. But at one point, I met one of the producers, and he said, you know, we're changing your story. We're going to start it here instead of where you started. Blah, blah, blah. He says, I hope you aren't offended. And I said, look, it's not my... Once you publish a book, it's no longer yours. It belongs to whoever reads it, whoever decides what they want to do with it. And I said, you know, the worst thing that happens, I figure, is I would go to a premiere and I'd be walking out and everybody would be saying, gee, the book was better. this seems like a win-win to me.
Well, I can tell you, I would not, as a script writer, I would not change that opening scene for anything. It is absolutely fantastic. And there is so much, really, as we would say, usable dialogue. We could actually use the author's words. My gosh, startling idea. One of the things is that you do have these twists. You do have the ambiguities at the beginning, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen, which makes for a good script. I mean, that's what we want. We want some surprises. Right. Complex, it's confusing, but we're headed for the payoff. And in this book, the payoff is absolutely a surprise at the end. And I thought, I loved it.
Well, you know, when I conceived of that ending early on, and I just had to figure out how to get there. And as I did, I kept saying, oh, God, I hope people buy this. I hope people buy this. And lo and behold, they do.
They do.
Find it perfectly acceptable.
This is why the book is so great. It unfolds in a nice, natural rhythm. You bring in with the music, and I love banjos. I just love banjos. My father played a banjo. He played the ukulele and the banjo, and I loved it. And you've brought in the music, so that's very important for a Southern book. You need to have that feel. That's why I wanted to play at the beginning, so people already get that taste, the flavor. And you got that in the book. Then your imagery, well, I'm not even going to go there because you're brilliant at that. We could talk, about your literary talents, your ability to do metaphors. They just must pour out of you. Metaphors are your middle name.
Well, you know, the South itself is really great on metaphors. That's one of the things I love about the South, is in a conversation with someone, you know, you'll hear expressions you don't hear anywhere else. And, as a, quote, student of language, that attracted to me right away 35 years ago when I first came here. And, for example, when some woman is talking about how a man has troubled her, she'll say something like, I did everything but hang on a cross for that man. And where else would you hear that?
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It's so beautiful. It's so fantastic. Your writing is absolutely terrific. You've done a beautiful job with this book, and it is called By the Rivers of Babylon, and it is by Mary Glickman, who also, I just want to mention that your book, An Undisturbed Peace, is an absolutely heart-wrenching book. I don't know if they could make a film of that one.
It is what it is. I have one hopefully coming out the end of this year, a new one, the end of this year, beginning of next, planned for that. You know, these things in publishing, it could always get bumped till the spring or the summer, for all I know. It's based on the Leo Frank case, which maybe you know or you don't know. but it was a famous lynching in 1916 of a factory manager, a Jewish factory
manager.
Yes,
I know.
Yeah, and the movie, the play Parade is based on it as well, which is in the news lately. But no, that's that one. I hope you read that one, too.
Well, I will.
I think that one's my best ever.
a new baby for you, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Well, you've done a beautiful job. Your website is really easy, Mary Glickman.
Thank you.
You can't.
Thank you.
And people can find it there. Of course, they can find this book wherever books are sold, if books are sold anywhere anymore.
Yeah,
which is sad. But
Amazon will be happy to bring it to your door.
That's right. They'll bring it right to you. And meanwhile, you're there in a lovely place with your neighbors all trying to figure out where they fit in this book. And then if they film it, will they be hired as extras?
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
You're already a star of the island. That
would make me an icon.
Oh, boy. If you get them in a film, they will be happy. Of course, you know, knowing Hollywood, they'll probably go someplace like Romania to film it. I mean, you never know. But
wherever the tax break is good.
No, actually, South Carolina has great tax break, unlike Florida. We used to have a great tax break. I one time just held in my hand a tax break for $4.3 million, and I looked at it and I thought, oh my goodness, it's almost like real money. tax break for $4.3 million, and then what happened? The stock market crashed.
The movie didn't get made.
Well, the stock market crashed.
Oh, it was 2008 or?
Yeah, October 2008. One hand I have tax credit for $4.2 million. Other hand I have investors, and then down the drain. But that's Hollywood. But with them,
that's showbiz.
That's it. And I hope that someone will pick up By the Rivers of Babylon, and especially for. Peter, who is listening, you're very lucky to have Peter.
I am indeed.
And they say an agent is worth his weight in gold, and so that's Peter.
Peter's worth his weight in plastic.
Oh, wow.
And he's not a short man.
That's true. Okay, well, Mary, it's been a joy to talk to you. As soon as Peter has a release date for the next book, I will have you back here on Joy and Paper. And meanwhile,
terrific.
People, immerse yourself. It's like a Faulkner novel. You have to immerse yourself in the richness and the powerful language. Just open yourself up to the sounds and the rhythms. Really, you will delight in Mary's writing. When you talk about imagery, we're talking, Mary is a master at it. Again, Mary, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much, Kathy. It's been wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow, Mary Glickman, she is a powerful writer. Bye-bye now.